Lost Horizon. The novel by James Hilton. Dramatized for radio in three parts by Barry Campbell. Starring Derek Jacobi as Hugh Conway. Episode 1. The Kidnapping.
Cigars had burnt low, and we were beginning to sample the disillusionment that usually afflicts old school friends who meet again as men and find themselves with less in common than they used to think. Rutherford wrote novels. Wyland was one of the embassy secretaries. He'd just given us dinner at Tempelhof. Not very cheerfully, I fancied, but with the equanimity which a diplomat must always keep on tap for such occasions. That evening in Berlin in 1932, however, was far from dull. We had a good view of the big Lufthansa machines as they arrived at the aerodrome from all parts of Central Europe. And towards dusk, when arc flares were lighted, the scene took on a rich theatrical brilliance.
As I see it, the Weimar economic policy deliberately kept unemployment high and thereby encouraged the political extremists. Just look at the way the National Socialists rose to power. In 1928, they only had 12 deputies in the Reichstag. 3 years later, they had 107. Now they rule the roost.
And you see that as a bad thing, do you, Rutherford? I ask.
Yes, I do. I see Herr Hitler as a damn bad thing.
Perhaps it would be as well if we changed the subject. I thought it was only we diplomats who always talk politics. Anyway, this is supposed to be a reunion, not a discussion group.
The writers are as bad as diplomats, if not worse, Wyland. After all, they have the ability to criticize without accepting any of the responsibility.
Oh, no. That's just not fair, Hilton. Why, if the politicians and diplomats would only listen to
us... Why, Wyland, Wyland. You're doing yourself proud.
I'm awfully sorry. Oh, good Lord. Nigel Sanders. I didn't recognize you in your flying gear. It's hard to tell one of you chaps from another when you're dressed like that.
Oh, I know that well enough. Don't forget, I was at Basco.
Quite. Well, sit down and join us in a drink. Hilton, Rutherford, Nigel Sanders, flying type.
How do you do?
That's right. Pull up a chair. Brandy suits you?
Oh, rather. Thank you.
I say... Isn't that Teddy Jerningham?
What?
Over there?
Yes.
Would you excuse me for a moment? I must have a word.
Yes, by all means. By the way, you mentioned Baskul just now. I know the place slightly. What exactly happened there?
Oh, just a bit of excitement we once had when I was in the service. Fact is, an Afghan or an Afridi or somebody ran off with one of our planes. There was the very devil to pay afterwards, as you can imagine. Most impudent thing I ever heard of.
Why? How did it happen?
Well, the blighter waylaid the pilot, knocked him out, pinched his kit and climbed into the cockpit without even a soul spotting him.
How did he manage to fly the thing?
Very well, apparently. Gave the mechanics the proper signals and was up and away in fine style.
Oh, when did this happen?
Ooh. Must have been about a year ago, May 31. We were evacuating civilians from Baskul to Peshawar after the revolution there. Place was in a bit of an upset, or I don't suppose the thing could have happened. Still, it did happen. And it goes some way to show that clothes make the man, doesn't it?
Yes.
I should have thought you'd have had more than one fellow in charge of a plane on an occasion like that.
Yes, quite.
Oh, we did on all the ordinary troop carriers. But this particular machine was a special one. The Indian survey people had been using it for high-altitude flights in Kashmir.
And it never reached Peshawar?
Never reached there, and never came down anywhere else, so far as we could discover. That was the queer part about it. Of course, if the fellow was a tribesman, he might have made for the hills, thinking to hold the passengers to ransom.
Passengers?
Yes. There were four. Three men and a woman. She was a missionary, I think. I suppose they all got killed somehow. There are heaps of places on the frontier where you might crash and not be heard of afterwards.
Tell me, was one of the men on that plane, by any chance, named Conway?
Why, yes, as a matter of fact. Glory Conway. Did you know?
Rather. We were all at school together.
Yes. He was a jolly fine chap, by all accounts of what he did at Bascom.
Oh, yes, undoubtedly. But how extraordinary. Extraordinary.
Sorry?
But I don't remember the affair being reported in the papers. How was that?
Well, to tell the truth, I seem to have let out more than I should have. Perhaps it doesn't matter now. Must be stale news in every mess, let alone in the bazaars. It was all hushed up, you see, about the way the thing happened. The government people merely gave out that one of their machines was missing and mentioned the names of the passengers. Sort of thing that didn't attract a lot of attention among outsiders.
Oh, sorry to be so long. Has Sanders been drawing the longbow? He's flying types, you know.
Actually, Wyland, these chaps have been talking about Glory Conway. I'm afraid I spilled the Baskill yarn.
Oh. I can't help feeling that it's a pity to make a mere anecdote of it. I always thought you air fellows were put on your honour not to tell tales out of school. But of course, it's all right where you chaps are concerned. But I'm sure you realise that it's sometimes necessary for events up on the frontier to be shrouded in a little mystery.
Yes, but on the other hand, one has a curious itch to know the truth.
It was never concealed from anyone who had any real reason for wanting to know it. Conway, eh? Have you seen much of him since school, Hilton?
No, we rather lost touch.
What about you, Rutherford?
Just a little. At Oxford. A few chance meetings since. Did you come across him much?
Once or twice, when I was stationed at Angora.
Do you like him?
Like? I thought he was clever, but rather slack.
He's certainly clever. Mm. Had a most exciting university career, until the war broke out. Mm. Rowing blue, leading light at the Union, and so forth. Also, I reckon him the best amateur pianist I ever heard. Yet, in point of fact, one never heard much about him after those Oxford days. Of course, the war cut into his career.
Now, I understand he was blown up or something of the sort. Nothing very serious.
Didn't he get a DSO in France?
Yes, I believe he did. And then he went back to Oxford for a spell as a sort of don.
I know he went east in 21. His Oriental languages got him the job without any of the usual preliminaries. Then he had several posts.
Of course, that accounts for everything. History will never disclose the amount of sheer brilliance wasted in the routine of decoding Foreign Office chits and hanging around at legation bun fights.
He was in the consular service, not the diplomatic.
Well, I must be off. Nice talking to you fellows.
Oh, yes, a nice meeting.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I must take my leave, too. I'm afraid I'm catching the Ostend Express at a very dismal hour in the morning.
My hotel is just around the corner. Why not come back and have a quiet drink in my sitting room until it's time for you to catch your train?
Well, that's very decent of you. Thank you, I will.
Well, good night, Wyland, old man.
Yeah, good night. Great pleasure to see you.
Thank you for a most excellent dinner.
Indeed, most excellent.
Not at all. But let me see you fellows to the door.
If I'm honest, I can't say I care much for Wyland.
What?
Or rather, I can't stand his type. All that primness and mountainous self-importance.
He is somewhat pompous.
Pompous? All that business of putting people on their honour and telling tales out of school. As if the Bally Empire was the fifth form at St. Dominic's.
Yes.
Yes, but then I always fall foul of these Saab diplomats. Still, I wouldn't have missed this evening. It was a peculiar experience for me, hearing Sanders tell that story about the affair at Basque. You see, I'd heard it before.
Oh?
And I hadn't properly believed it. It was all part of a very much more fantastic story, which I saw no reason to believe at all.
Really? But tell me more about Conway.
Well, he was always very decent to me at school. As you know, I like him a good deal, although I've seen surprisingly little of him, if you measure it in time.
Why did they call him Glory Conway? I never knew. He left at the end of my first term, and I never met him afterwards.
That, nothing really. He was tall, good-looking, and not only excellent at games, but walked off with every conceivable school prize. Oh. Well, that rather sentimental headmaster once referred to his exploits as glorious, hence the nickname.
I see.
Ah, here we are. Excuse me while I get my key.
Of course.
Good enough, Mina. Good enough. This way, Hilton. Help yourself to soda.
Thank you. I noticed that whereas Sanders spoke of Conway in the past tense, you spoke of him in the present. I like him a good deal, you said. I find that rather odd.
I wondered if you'd noticed. Well, the fact is, Conway isn't dead.
Not dead? But how can you possibly know that?
Because I travelled with him from Shanghai to Honolulu in a Japanese liner last November.
Good Lord.
Yes, it's a strange story. I dare say you can guess I'm not a particularly gullible person. I've spent a good deal of my life travelling about, and I know there are queer things in the world. And yet... well, one thing's certain. I'm not likely to take Wyland into my confidence.
No.
Be like trying to sell an epic poem to Titbits. I'd rather try my luck with you.
You flatter me.
Your book doesn't lead me to think so.
Now I am flattered. After all, it's only a minor work on neurology.
Well, you see, I was interested because amnesia was Conway's trouble at one time.
Really?
Here, let me help you to a spot more whiskey. Oh,
thank you.
And I'll tell you all about it.
Just a drop, thank you.
Well... you see, I was in China in the autumn, on holiday. I'm always wandering about. I hadn't seen Conway for years. We never corresponded, and I can't say he was often in my thoughts. Well, to cut a long story short, I landed up at the Mission Hospital at Chungkyang. I remember there was a very charming Mother Superior and a Chinese doctor who was most interested to learn that I was a writer.
You are perhaps to put our mission in one of your books. I must be most careful what I say.
Oh, don't worry. I shan't criticize you if I do. I've seldom seen a cleaner or better ordered hospital.
Oh, you are most kind to say so. I have something you may wish to write about. Mm-hmm. We have a mysterious Englishman here at the mission.
An Englishman? Really?
You are interested. A fever case brought in 2 or 3 weeks past. I say mysterious Englishman, but that is only assumption, for he could give no account of himself, and he had no papers.
But his clothes?
He wore native clothes of the very poorest kind, and when taken in by the nuns, he had been very ill indeed. He spoke fluent Chinese, pretty good French, but the Mother Superior assures me that before he realized the nationality of nuns, he also addressed them in English, with most refined accent.
And the Mother Superior would recognize a refined English accent?
Oh, yes, indeed. You are skeptical. Very well. You must judge for yourself. Come, follow me.
In this next bed. Ah, he appears to be asleep. A pity, perhaps.
No, he's waking up, I think. Yes. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good God. Conway.
But you know this man?
Well, indeed I do. He's a friend of mine. Well, Conway, what a place to meet.
I'm very sorry, but...
You must realize that he has completely lost his memory.
So it would appear. But look here. I think I can be of some use. Mm-hmm. If possible, I should like to stay here for a little while. Perhaps I can help him remember things.
Well, that could only be beneficial, I'm sure.
And then perhaps when he regains his physical strength, I might travel with him. Who knows? Anyway, I should certainly like to stay and try to help the poor fellow.
I am delighted. I will make the necessary arrangements.
As Conway's health improved, we talked a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
When I told him, quite frankly, who I was and who he was, he was docile enough not to argue about it. He even seemed glad of my company.
I'm sure.
When I suggested that I should take him home, he simply said he didn't mind.
And did you bring him home?
I was coming to that.
Yeah.
Well, we made our exit from China in quite a normal way. We sailed down the Yangtze to Nanking and then took a train for Shanghai. There was a Jap liner leaving for Frisco that same night, so we made a great rush and got on board.
You did a tremendous lot for him.
I don't think I should have done quite so much for anyone else. But there was something about the fellow. Always had been. It's hard to explain, but it made one enjoy doing what one could.
Yes. He had a peculiar charm. Although, of course, I still think of him as a schoolboy in cricket flannels.
Pity you didn't know him at Oxford. He's just brilliant. The kind of fellow one feels that Jowett would have tipped for a future premier. I think the war changed him a lot. People said he was different after the war. I think myself, he was.
In what way?
I don't quite know. But I can't help feeling that with all his gifts, he ought to be doing bigger work. All that Britannic majesty stuff isn't my idea of a great man's career.
Mm.
And Conway was, or should have been, great.
I agree.
Now, you and I have both known him. And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say... It's an experience we shan't ever forget. And even when he and I met in the middle of China, with his mind a blank and his past a mystery, there was still that strange core of attractiveness in him. Yeah, but I was telling you about our journey together. As you can imagine, we remade our old friendship on the boat. I told him as much as I knew about himself, and he listened with an attention that might almost have seemed a little absurd.
Did his memory return?
That was the odd thing. He remembered everything quite clearly since his arrival at the Chungkyang mission. But, and this will interest you,
yeah,
he hadn't forgotten languages. He told me, for instance, that he must have had something to do with India, because he could speak Hindustani.
How did he know it was Hindustani?
I never thought to ask. Well, now we come to another curious thing. At Yokohama, the ship filled up, and among the new passengers was Sievking, the concert pianist. A few nights after leaving Japan, Sievking was prevailed upon to give a piano recital on board. Of course, Conway and I went along to hear him.
Gentlemen, I feel sure that you would all like me to thank Mr. Andre Sieveking on your behalf for the truly wonderful recital which he has so kindly given us tonight. Thank you.
Well, I must say that was first class. Don't you agree? Conway? Conway?
What? Sorry, did you speak?
Yes, I was saying how well Sieveking played tonight.
Oh, yes, extremely well. Excuse me one moment, will you?
I said, Conway, are you all right?
Yes, perfectly. But please, stay there.
Well, sir, I hope you'll agree that we have been most royally entertained this evening.
Yes, indeed. First-rate recital. Allow me to introduce myself. My name's Rutherford, Simon Rutherford.
What's this, an encore?
Who is that chap? Bit of a cheek following Sieveking like that.
Well, he plays well, though.
Do you know him?
Good Lord, it's Conway.
Excuse me. Conway, what the devil?
Please accept my apologies. My friend is unwell.
Please, don't apologize. This is excellent.
I'm afraid I didn't recognize the work, although it does seem vaguely familiar. What is it called?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Don't know? Well, surely this wasn't an improvisation.
No, of course not. I have it now. It was Chopin Polonaise.
Oh, really?
It's a Chopin Polonaise, I tell you. Listen.
Dear fellow, I know everything of Chopin's that exists, and I can assure you he never wrote the work that you have just played.
Damn it, I tell you, it's a Chopin Polonaise.
Steady, Conway.
I will agree that it is utterly in his style, but I challenge you to show me the score in any of the editions.
Are you suggesting that I'm lying? Oh, yes, I remember now. Sorry, it was never printed.
Never printed? Then how on earth did you come to learn it?
From meeting a man who used to be one of Chopin's pupils.
Oh, but that's quite
impossible. Excuse me, butting in, gentlemen. My name's Kornblatt. Newberg Kornblatt, University of California. I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. What you're saying, sir, is chronologically impossible. Or almost.
I assure you, sir, I'm telling the truth.
Oh, I didn't mean to
what
say...
What I have just played is an unpublished Chopin Polonaise.
This is all very puzzling. Why, if that piece were to be published, it would be in every virtuoso's repertoire within 6 months.
Listen to this. It's another unpublished piece I learned from the same chap.
I don't know if you're interested in music, Hilton.
Mm-mm.
But even if you're not, I dare say you will be able to imagine something of Sieveking's excitement as Conway continued to play.
Mm. Yes, indeed.
And to me, of course, it was a sudden and quite mystifying glimpse into Conway's past. Mm-hmm. The first clue, as it were. The Thief King was naturally engrossed in the musical problem, which was perplexing enough, as you'll realize when I tell you that Chopin died in 1849.
Good Lord!
The whole incident was unfathomable. Anyhow, after a great deal of argument, nothing was settled, for Conway stuck to his story. And as he was beginning to look fatigued, I was anxious to get him away from the crowd and off to bed. The Thief King said that he would arrange for Conway to play both pieces before a microphone. I often feel it was a great pity that he never did.
Why especially?
Because that night, he got back his memory.
But how on...
We had both turned in, and I was lying awake when he came into my cabin and told me. His face had stiffened into what I can only describe as an expression of overwhelming sadness. He said he could call to mind everything, that it had begun to come back to him during Steve King's playing, though only sketchily at first. Then he sat for a long while on the edge of my bunk.
And then?
Well, of course, I said I was glad his memory had returned, but sorry if he already wished it hadn't. He looked up then and paid me what I shall always regard as a marvellously high compliment.
Yes?
Thank God, Rutherford, he said, that you are capable of imagining things. Then, after a while, we dressed and went on deck. It was a calm, starry night. Very warm. I let Conway go his own way without questions at first. Somewhere about dawn, he began to talk consecutively, and it was mid-morning and hot sunshine when he'd finished. He was very unhappy and couldn't have slept, so we talked almost constantly. About the middle of the following night, the ship was due to reach Honolulu. We had drinks in my cabin the evening before. He left me about 10 o'clock. I never saw him again.
You don't mean...
Lord, no. He wasn't that sort. He just gave me the slip. Afterwards, I learned that he had managed to join the crew of a banana boat going south to Fiji.
How did you get to know that?
He wrote to me, 3 months later, from Bangkok, enclosing a draft to cover the expenses I had been put to on his account.
Generous.
He thanked me, said he was very fit, and that he was about to set out on a long journey to the northwest. That was all.
Where did he mean?
Yes. It's pretty vague, isn't it? A good many places must lie to the northwest of Bangkok.
Berlin does, for one.
So it does. But your glass is empty.
Just a small one, thank you. Thank you. It's certainly an odd story. But the part that interests me is...
I know. Just how did he get to the mission at Chungkyang?
Well, how did he get to Chungkyang? He must have told you that night on the ship.
He told me something about it. And it would be absurd of me, after telling you so much, to be secretive about the rest of it. But it's a longish tale, and there wouldn't be time to tell it before you have to be off to catch your train.
Oh, that's a great pity.
Besides, as it happens, there's a more convenient way.
Huh?
I am a little diffident about revealing the tricks of my dishonorable calling. But the truth is, Conway's story appealed to me enormously. I began by making simple notes. Then, as certain aspects of the thing began to grip me, I fashioned my notes and recollected fragments into a single narrative. I take it and read it. You can make of it what you like.
By which I suppose you mean that I'm not expected to believe it.
Hardly as definite a warning as that. But mind, if you do believe it, it will be for Tertullian's famous reason. You remember?
Credo quia impossibile.
Not a bad argument, maybe. Huh. Let me know what you think, at all events.
I took the manuscript away with me and read most of it on the Ostend Express. Before I could return it, I received a short note from Rutherford to say that he was off on his wanderings again. He was going to Kashmir, he wrote, and thence east. I was not surprised. As for the manuscript, the story it contained was incredible. And reading it in the early morning darkness as my train sped across Europe, I was reminded again and again of Tertullian's phrase, "I believe because it is impossible." During the third week in May, the situation in Basgul had become much worse. On the 20th, the Air Force machines arrived by arrangement from Peshawar to evacuate the white residents across the mountains in troop carriers. Miscellaneous aircraft were also employed, among them a cabin machine lent by the Maharaja of Chandrapur.
Well, it appears that you four are in luck. First-class luxury travel. You've drawn the Maharaja's liner, no less. Jolly good. Now, if I can just have a note of your names for the records, have to make sure no one gets left behind and so forth. Let's start with the lady, shall we?
Roberta Brinklow of the Eastern Mission.
Brinklow?
Henry D. Barnard of the United States of America.
Was that D or E?
D.
Oh, thank you. Captain Charles Mallinson, HM Vice Consul.
And Hugh Conway, HM Consul.
I'm very proud to meet you, sir. Very proud.
Thank you for getting us all away in such good order.
All in a day's work, sir. Now, if you'll follow me, I'll get you safely stowed aboard.
Will you be flying us out yourself?
No, worse luck. Chap from the field called Fenner will take you out in about 10 minutes' time.
Charlie Fenner? I know him.
Yes, that's a chap. All be pals together. Have you got your gear?
Yes.
Right, now, if you'll just follow me, please. Piloting us.
Well, isn't he?
Well, the pilot chap turned his head just now, and I'll swear it wasn't Fenner.
Well, it's hard to tell through the glass panel.
I know Fenner's face anywhere.
Well, then it must be somebody else. I don't see that it matters.
But that Air Force fellow said Fenner was to be our pilot.
Well, they must have changed their minds.
Well, who is this man, then?
My dear boy, how should I know? Now, when we arrive at Peshawar, you can make his acquaintance and you can ask him all about himself.
At this rate, we shan't get to Peshawar at all. The man's right off his course.
What's that you say?
He's off course. I'm not surprised either, flying so damned high. He can't see where he is.
We certainly are high.
I shouldn't worry about it. He's bound to have a good reason for it.
Is it? At this rate, there'll hardly be time for a drink at the club when we land.
Don't be too sure. We're going down now.
My God, look down there. This isn't Peshawar.
No, I didn't recognize this part of the world. It looks as if you're right. This man's lost his way.
But it's getting rough.
You all right, Miss Brinkler?
Thank you. I'm quite all right.
Looks like he wants to land.
He can't. He'd be simply mad if he tried to. He'll crash.
Hold tight, all of you.
That was touch and go.
Is everyone all right?
Yes, thank you.
Where do you suppose we are?
It's typical frontier country by the look of it.
But what the devil?
Look out there. Tribesmen, hundreds of them.
They're surrounding the plane.
And where's the pilot off to?
I do hope nothing happens to him.
He certainly knows how to fly a plane.
I'm going to find out what's going on. It's no good. They won't let us out.
You suppose?
Right, it's all right, all right. But they're bringing up cans of petrol. We've simply stopped for refueling.
Well, that's a relief. For a moment there, I thought it was all up with us.
And look there. I was right. That chap's not Fenner. Why, I don't believe he's even a European. If you ask me, this is all a bit fishy. What shall we do?
Well, what can we do? We have no firearms of any sort. Even if we had, we're outnumbered 50-1. We'll just have to sit here and make the best of it.
It's getting mighty hot in here.
Isn't it? What I wouldn't give for a nice long drink.
Can't we open the door? Just a bit.
No good, they won't let us.
Well,
The pilot's climbing back into the cockpit.
Hi, look out. What? That fellow at the window.
Oh, no, it's all right. They're only handing something in.
Careful. What is it?
It's a can of water. It's tepid, but drinkable.
Oh, well, that's something.
We're taking off.
So we are. Where to now, I wonder?
At least it's cool enough.
You know, I've been giving the matter some thought, and I think I've got the answer.
Which is?
We're being kidnapped for ransom.
You don't say.
Good gracious.
Nothing to worry about there, Miss Brinklow. The tribesmen keep you hidden away in some lair in the mountains until the government pays up, and then you're released. They treat one quite decently, I believe. And since the ransom money is paid by the government, you're no worse off. The whole business is only unpleasant while it lasts. Afterwards, the air people send a bombing squadron, and you're left with a good story to tell for the rest of your life.
Well, I dare say it's a cute idea on somebody's part, but I can't exactly say that your Air Force has covered itself with glory. You Britishers make jokes about the holdups in Chicago and all that, but I don't recollect any instance of a gunman running over with one of Uncle Sam's aeroplanes.
I wonder what happened to the real pilot, old Fenner.
They sandbagged him, I should reckon.
Look here, I want all of you to go through your pockets and bags and let me have any blank scraps of paper you can find.
What for, Mr. Conway?
Well, if we have been kidnapped, and it seems very likely that we have, I intend to write SOS messages in several languages and then drop them out of the plane at intervals.
Oh. First-class idea.
That's a very slender chance, but it's worth a try, I'm sure.
Okay, let's get to work. I'm tired. Conway's fallen asleep already.
I don't wonder at it after these last few weeks.
You with Brandon?
I worked with him at the consulate. I happen to know that he hasn't been to bed for the last four nights. As a matter of fact, we're very lucky having him with us in a tight corner like this. Apart from knowing the languages, he's got a sort of way with him in dealing with people. If anyone can get us out of this mess, he can.
Well, let him have his sleep then.
I think he looks a very brave man.
Say, you've been glued to that window all afternoon, young fella. What can you see down there that's so darn interesting?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It's all so misty.
No, I think we're flying too high to get a clear sighting of anything below.
You're still traveling east, though, I'm sure of that.
Well, we seem to be in a fix, Miss Brinklow. But I'm glad you're taking it so calmly. I don't really think anything dreadful is going to happen to us.
I'm certain it won't if you can prevent it.
But you must let me know if there's anything we can do to make you more comfortable.
Comfortable? Why, of course we're comfortable. We're just enjoying the trip. Pity we haven't got a pack of cards. We could make up a bridge for.
But I don't suppose Miss Brinklow plays.
Indeed I do. I see no harm whatever in playing cards. There's nothing against them in the Bible, you know.
This is all very well, but are we going to sit here twiddling our thumbs while this maniac flying us does everything he damn well wants? What's to stop us smashing that panel and having it out with him?
Nothing at all, except that he's armed and we're not. In any case, none of us would know how to bring this machine back to Earth afterwards.
It can't be very hard, surely. I dare say you could do it.
My dear Mallinson, why is it always me you expect to perform these miracles?
Well, anyway, this business is beginning to get on my nerves. Can't we make the fellow take us down?
Now, how do you suggest it should be done?
Well, he's there, isn't he? About 6 feet away from us, and we're 3-1. At least we might force him to tell us what the game is.
Very well. We'll see. Let me get by. Thank you.
Hello there. What's going on? Look out. He's pointing his revolver.
It's bluff. He wouldn't dare shoot.
If you don't mind, I'd rather leave you to make sure.
Well, I do feel we ought to put up some sort of fight.
Putting up a fight without a decent chance of winning is a poor game, and I'm not that sort of hero.
Good for you, sir. When someone's got you by the short hairs, you may as well give in pleasantly and admit it. For my part, I'm going to enjoy a cigar. I hope you don't think a little extra danger matters to us.
No, not at all, but I think it might bother Miss Brinklow.
Pardon me, madam, but do you object to my smoking?
Not at all. I enjoy the smell of a cigar.
Ah, well, cigarette, Mallinson.
No, thank you.
Look, old chap, I know how you feel. It's a bad lookout. And it's all the worse in some ways, because there isn't much we can do about it.
I wonder where we are.
So imagine we're still in India.
You recognize where we are?
Well, no, I've never been anywhere near here before, but I wouldn't be surprised if that mountain there isn't Nanga Parbat, the one Mummery lost his life on in 65. It, the structure and general layout seems in accord with all I've heard about it.
You a mountaineer yourself?
In my younger days, I was keen. Only the usual Swiss clubs, of course.
There'd be more point in discussing where we're going to. I wish to God somebody could tell us.
Looks to me as if we're heading for that range yonder. Don't you agree?
Certainly. And I think that range must be the Karakorams. There are several passes if our man intends to cross them.
Our man? You mean our maniac? I reckon it's time we dropped the kidnapping theory. We're far past the frontier now, and there aren't any tribes living round here. The only explanation I can think of is that this fellow's a raving lunatic. Would anybody but a lunatic fly into this sort of country?
I know that nobody but a damn fine airman would.
I agree.
I never was any good at geography, but I understand that these are reputed to be the highest mountains in the world. And if that's so, it's a pretty first-class performance to cross them.
And also the will of God.
You're quite right, Barnard. This affair grows more and more remarkable.
Remarkable or not, I don't feel inclined to propose a vote of thanks because the fellow happens to be a stunt flyer. Even if he is, he can be just as much a lunatic.
Very well organized lunacy, though, wouldn't you say? Don't forget that landing for petrol. Also, that this machine was the only one at the airfield that could climb to this sort of height.
That doesn't prove he isn't mad. He may have been mad enough to arrange the whole thing.
Of course, that is possible.
Well, then, what we've got to do is to decide on a plan of action. What are we going to do when he lands, if he doesn't crash and kill us all? That is, what are we going to do? Rush forward and congratulate him on his marvelous flight, I suppose?
Not on your life. I'll leave you to do all the rushing for me. It's getting mighty cold. Full moon out there. I wonder how far we've traveled.
Anything up to 1,000 miles, I should say.
Where would that bring us to?
It's not easy to judge, but probably some part of Tibet. If these are the Karakorams, Tibet lies just beyond one of those crests. One of them must be K2.
Next on the list after Everest. Boy, this is some scenery.
And from a climber's point of view, K2 is much stiffer than Everest. The Duke of Abruzzic gave it up as an absolutely impossible peak.
God!
I guess you must be the official guide on this trip, Conway. Boy, if I had a flask of cognac, I wouldn't care if it was Tibet or Tennessee.
But what are we going to do about it? I just don't see how you can sit there and make jokes about it.
Well, it's as good as making a scene about it, young fella.
As you haven't asked my opinion, perhaps I oughtn't to give it. But I should like to say that I agree with Mr. Mallinson. I'm sure the poor man can't be quite right in the head. The pilot, I mean, of course. There would be no excuse for him anyhow, even if he were not mad.
Hold on!
This is my first trip in the air, my very first. Nothing would ever induce me to do it before. A friend of mine tried her very best to persuade me to fly from London to Paris.
And now you're flying from India to Tibet instead. Well, that's the way things happen.
I knew a missionary once who'd been in Tibet. He said the Tibetans are very odd people. They believe we are descended from monkeys.
That's a remarkably cute of them.
Oh, dear, no, I don't mean in the modern way. They've had the belief for hundreds of years. Of course, I'm all against it myself, and I think Darwin was worse than any Tibetan.
Fundamentalist, I suppose.
I used to belong to the LMS, but I disagreed with them about infant baptism.
But what can the London, Midland and Scottish
the
Railway...
London Missionary Society.
Oh, sorry, I thought it was... What's happened?
My God, we're going down.
It's all right. It's all right. He's going to land. Hold tight, everybody. We're landing. Hold on!
Oh,
Is everyone all right?
I think so.
Quite all right.
Just a bruise or two. I'm going to open the door.
Careful now.
No need to be careful. This looks like the end of the world.
What can you see?
Not much. There's not a soul about, anyhow.
Hold on. We'll go out together. It's all right. Jump down.
God, it's cold.
It's all right, Barnard.
Okay.
Help Miss Brinkler down, will you?
Come on, I'm not scared of that fellow on land, whoever he is. I'm going to tackle him right away.
Wellinson, be careful.
All right, ma'am.
Yes, thank you.
What's happening?
I say, Conway.
What?
I think this fellow's ill or dead or something.
Well, hang on. I'll come up and have a look.
I can't get a word out of him.
Here, let me see. Yes, he doesn't look too good, does he?
I've got his revolver at any rate.
Better give that to me. It's difficult to see exactly what's happened.
I've got some matches, but in this
No, for God's sake, don't strike a match. Can't you smell the petrol? Here, give me a hand to get him out of the cockpit.
Lay him down.
Careful now.
Here, let me help.
What has happened to him? Poor fellow.
He's unconscious, but not dead. It's possibly a heart attack brought on by the high altitude. Well, we can't do much for him out here. There's no shelter from this infernal wind. Better get him inside the cabin. And ourselves, too. We haven't the least idea where we are, so it's hopeless to make a move before daylight. Now, all of you, help me lift him up. Ready? Lift. How is he now?
His heart's very faint.
I wonder if this would be of any use to the poor man. Of course, I never touch a drop myself, but I always carry it with me in case of accidents. And this is the sort of accident.
I should say it is.
Brandy.
Brandy, by God.
Just the stuff on him, thanks. Mallinson, I should think it's safe to light that match now. Let's have a look at him.
Right here. Oh. He isn't much of a beauty, is he? Chinese, I should say, if he's anything at all. I say, what a lot of damn fools we look, striking matches over a corpse.
He's not a corpse yet. Now, with a bit of luck, we may bring him round.
Luck? It'll be his luck, not ours.
Don't be too sure and shut up for the time being, anyhow. Now, listen. I'll sit up with this fellow, and I suggest that the rest of you try to get some sleep.
Bleak, isn't it?
Bleak, but magnificent. Just look at that mountain in the sunrise. Quite perfect.
Any idea where we are?
At a guess, I should say we've reached the loftiest and least hospitable part of the Earth's surface.
That bad, huh? Well, what are we going to do?
What indeed? We have no food. The plane won't fly. Even if we could fly it.
But surely when the pilot recovers...
The pilot is dead. He died during the night.
I see. I thought he was still sleeping.
I hope you're not feeling too bad this morning, Miss Brinklow.
No, no. The soldiers in the war had to suffer worse things than this. I've just been saying a prayer for the poor pilot.
Well, we're in a pretty fine pickle now, Conway. What are we going to do?
I don't know. But the pilot said...
You spoke to him? Good God.
Yes, but I'm sorry to say he told me very little. Merely that we are in Tibet, which is obvious anyway.
But why on earth...
He didn't give any coherent account of why he brought us here. But he seemed to know the locality. He spoke a kind of Chinese that I don't understand very well. But I think he said something about a lamasery near here. Along the valley.
Did he, by Jove? A lamasery? What's that?
It's a Buddhist monastery. He said we could get food and shelter there.
Well, that's something.
Yes. He was most emphatic that we should go there.
Which doesn't seem to me any reason at all why we should. After all, he was probably off his head, wasn't he?
You know as much about that as I do. And if we don't go to this lamasery, where else are we to go?
Anywhere you like, I don't care. All I'm certain of is that this, what you call it, lamasery, if it's in that direction, must be a few extra miles from civilization. I should feel happier if we were lessening the distance, not increasing it. Damnation, man, aren't you going to get us back?
I don't think you properly understand the position, Mallinson. We're in a part of the world that no one knows very much about. Except that it's difficult and dangerous, even for a fully equipped expedition.
Yeah, that's right.
Considering that hundreds of miles of this sort of country probably surround us on all sides, the notion of walking back to Peshawar doesn't strike me as very hopeful.
I don't think I could possibly manage it.
Then it looks as if we're damn lucky that this lamasery is around the corner.
If it is.
Comparatively lucky, maybe. After all, we've no food. In a few hours, we shall all be famished, and then tonight, when it gets colder again... Well, it's not a pleasant prospect.
No, indeed.
Our only chance, it seems to me, is to find some other human beings. And where else should we begin looking for them? Except where we've been told they exist.
But what if it's a trap?
A nice warm trap would suit me down to the ground.
All very well, but...
I take it then that we're all more or less agreed. Now, there's an obvious way along the valley. It doesn't look too steep, though we shall have to take it very slowly. In any case, we can do nothing here. We couldn't even bury the pilot without dynamite to dig a hole. Besides, the lamasery people may be able to supply us with porters for the journey back.
Yeah.
Now, I suggest we start at once, so that if we don't locate the place by late afternoon, we shall have time to return here for another night in the cabin of the aeroplane.
And suppose we do locate it? Have we any guarantee we shan't be murdered?
None at all, but I think it a less, and perhaps also a preferable risk to being starved or frozen to death up here.
Oh, yes.
As a matter of fact, murder is the very last thing one would expect in a Buddhist monastery. It would be rather less likely than being killed in an English cathedral.
Like St. Thomas of Canterbury?
Quite.
Very well, then. We'll be off to the lamasery, wherever it is. Let's just hope it's not halfway up a mountain, because if it is...
Look up there.
My God. What's that coming out of the mist?
Men. Coming down the slope.
It's Providence.
But where on earth can they be going?
They're not going anywhere. They're coming here.
Where's that revolver?
Don't be a fool. Now keep still. All of you. Just stand still.
One of them's coming over. Looks like their leader. Funny looking cove, looks Chinese.
I hope he speaks Chinese.
They don't look violent.
How do you do? My name is Chang. I am from the Lamasery of Shangri-La.
In Part 1 of Lost Horizon by James Hilton, Derek Jacobi was Hugh Conway. Mallinson was Andrew Branch. Barnard, Alan Tilden. Miss Brinklow, Carol Marsh. Rutherford, John Livesey. Wyland, Sean Probert. James Hilton, Alaric Cotter. Sanders, Gary Cady. The Chinese Doctor, John Bull. And Chang, Gerard Green. The pianist was Anthony Mile. Lost Horizon is dramatized by Barry Campbell and directed by Graham Gould.